The man is burning up the dance halls because it's so hot. They took a little Roomba rhythm, then they added boogie woogie, and now look what they've got. Rum boogie, rum boogie woogie. It's Harlem's new creation with the Cuban syncopation. It's a killer. Rum boogie, rum boogie woogie. The native rhythm haunts you, it's barbaric and it taunts you. It's a killer.
Welcome to Tube Talk, friends. This is the show for the radio enthusiast, the fine music lover. This is your program. You've discovered the coolest hobby on the face of the planet. That's right, the world of antique vintage radio. Yes, you have truly persevered. You've tuned in via the net or at AM 1330 on the beloved standard broadcast band. For the best show, you wait all week for it. Hopefully, you'll enjoy tonight's program.
Sue wants to barbecue. Sam wants to boil a ham. Grace wants to put a baked stew.
Tell her to bring the fish.
Jake wants a weenie baked steak and a layer cake. He'll get a tummy ache, too.
Yes, we'll rent a tent or a teepee. Let the town crier cry. And if it's not RSVP, this is what I reply.
In the cool, cool, cool of evening, tell them we'll be there. In the cool, cool, cool of evening, better save a chair.
Getting a glow on and singing fills the air.
In the shank of the night when the doings are right,
well, you can tell us we'll be there. Crew, said the captain, who should know a thing or two. Late in the evening one fall, down in the Caribbean, some Aborigines rode out to pay us a call.
You like a sing, a jingle, we like a tooth, they cry. I couldn't speak their lingo, so here's what I reply.
In the cool, cool, cool of the evening, tell them we'll be there. If the frying steak they are trying, say we like it rare.
When the trial is getting a glow on,
it's
and tom-toms fill the air.
If the dinner is free and the dinner ain't we,
well, you can tell them we'll be there.
There's gas in my hat and my laundry is back.
Well, you can tell us.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're very pleased to have a returning guest this evening on Tube Talk. Mr. Mark Oppitt joins us from the great state of Michigan. Mark, thanks for coming on the show tonight. I appreciate it.
Great to be here, Paul. Thanks for having me.
Well, you know, we got a few things we wanted to cover with Mr. Oppitt this evening, so we'll get to the meat of the subject first, though. And, you know, I have people approach me, or sometimes they'll drop me an email, and they'll say, I'm new to the hobby, or I'm thinking of getting started in the hobby, and what should I really look for if I'm out kicking around a radio swap meet or a flea market or even an antique store? What should turn me off or what should attract me to a radio? So I guess what I'd ask you, Mark, is what makes a good radio? You know, something maybe, you know, you could always go out and probably find a little plastic All-American 5 clock radio somewhere, but a lot of guys would say, well, you know, you want to get yourself a radio that's a real radio. What should somebody look for if they're trying to get into the hobby and they're out scrounging around trying to get a good starter set?
Well, first of all, we can't say just guys because there can be women out there too.
Yes, guys and gals.
And in fact,
thank you much.
in our club, we have a few that do collect, and they don't collect just for style either, but also some of them for usability. But that's the first thing I do ask a lot of newbies is whether they're interested in collecting for style or performance or both, because those are all factors that you can assess a radio of any age, be it from the 1920s all the way up to the end of the tube era, say in the 1960s or beyond into the transistor radios. Whether you're looking for something that just whether you're collecting for some visual appeal or for technical reasons, and or for percentages of each, but in each era that you can select those things. But one thing that people don't realize is how difficult it is to get the cosmetics right, especially in the post-war radios where they started adding little plastic trim or metal trim to the cabinet. Those are parts that, because I'm a parts dealer, frequently people are inquiring to me by email that they're looking for, and they're just not parts that you can get.
No,
nobody's making them. Nobody probably ever will make most of them.
I'm, as a matter of fact, I'm looking for some, I could use some for, I have a Grundig that lost its little metal medallion on the grill cloth.
Yes.
And you know what? I'm just never going to find one,
actually, I may even have that part.
All right. Well, see.
I have a lot of German radio parts and things that I've radios that I've scrapped over the years, and those are parts that I do pay a lot of attention to because they are in such high demand.
Well, we'll talk later.
Yes, we will. But there's the rub also is that you see those parts. There's such variety of them. So you say a Grundig badge. I know what it is, but you know what? They probably made 20 different versions of those
badges.
Sure,
to get the right one for my
different
set,
sizes,
could be a tall order.
different different shapes and whatnot. And keep in mind how easy those parts were for kids to pick off with a finger.
Oh, sure.
Or,
yep.
Or break, when you're moving the thing or something like that. So cosmetic stuff is the stuff you really have to pay a lot of attention to first. If you want the radio to look good and be complete, you got to know what things are available and what aren't. And in general, most of the post-war parts are not in reproduction. You're not going to find any of those knobs that have the little brass piece in the middle very easily. You're going to have to find an original. You're going to have to talk to a knob dealer like myself. I'm one of the bigger knob dealers in the country. But there's several others that I know, and I'm always happy to refer people over to the others as well. But, you can really spend a long, long time trying to find a cosmetic part, whereas an internal part, they're somewhat interchangeable. I mean, there's a lot of interchangeability in a power transformer, an IF can, or whatever. Those things are things we can work around more easily than specific parts that were on the outside of the cabinet.
So rule number one then is we try to find something as complete as possible to minimize having to hunt around or find either a duplicate part that doesn't exist or find a junker set that you could take apart and pirate the parts off of. And as far as the performance of the set, a lot of people who will, they scoff at AC/DC sets or sets that do not have a power transformer. And they say if it has a transformer, it's probably a pretty good playing set and has good performance. Do you think that's a fairly accurate statement or maybe not so accurate?
In general it is, but not always. There are some very good performing, as you say, AC/DC radios, which we also frequently called All-American Fives or things of that nature. Those are radios that did not use power transformers, and they're generally smaller and lighter table radios that were made beginning in the mid-1930s mainly, and they were made all the way till the end of the tube era in the late 1960s. And most people consider them to be kind of cheaper radios, and most of them are, but the performance quality is still pretty good on a lot of them, especially if they have a good quality speaker. There were some larger speaker models made that were the transformerless kind of radios.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In particular, RCA made several of them in the mid-1950s, and also Zenith did with their famous AM/FM radios that had the big circle grill in the middle with the propeller type dial pointer on them.
And very nice sounding sets.
They're very good radios. But one thing I wanted to mention to everyone is that in the post-war era, they started using a different kind of what we call an IF can, which is a little square kind of a can, aluminum. And the kind that we're running into big problems in today's day is they're about 3/4 of an inch in square on top, and they stand about 2 to 2.5 inches high. And they have one little hole in the top for a little adjuster on it, and there's also a hole in the bottom. But if you're just looking at the top of it, you won't see that. But if you see those in there, they have a little capacitor built into the base of them, made out of silver paint applied to a sheet of mica, and over time that silver paint tends to migrate across and cause a shorting condition, which can make the radio sound like it's in a lightning storm, or where you hear static, or you will hear the volume go up and down, or the radio just might be totally inoperable. And that can be on AM or FM or both if you have FM on the radio.
Every set seems to...
It's called the dreaded silver migration problem, and that's starting to crop up now a lot. So what used to be a blanket situation where I could tell people, all the post-war radios are fairly easy to fix, is no longer true.
Right.
If you run into that problem, it's a little more serious. It's still fixable, but it's a little more work to do than you would normally want to get into.
Well, but, you know what might not actually be a bad suggestion, then? We take it to this conclusion on that point. You know, a lot of, and it may be that, especially if you heard a console set with a large speaker, and usually, though there are some, but usually those were transformer-driven sets, you know, there's a certain sound. Well, part of that is due to the size of the speaker, and as you were mentioning, especially RCA and Zenith had some sets that even though they were AC/DC, had a larger speaker. I have an RCA. It's just pre-war. I think it's like 1940-41. It's a 28X5, and it has a 9-inch elliptical speaker in it. It's an 8-tube set, no transformer, and it sounds darn good, you know. So if you can take a peek in the back of a perspective set that you're looking at, check out the speaker. It doesn't look like it's a 4 and a 5-incher. That's probably about a standard. But if you see something that looks like it could be a 6 or maybe even an 8-inch speaker, you could have a sleeper there. You could have something that's going to have a big sound in a small package.
I know the radio you're talking about, and it is a fantastic radio, but that's a pretty unusual radio for that
era. Yeah. Yeah.
But yes, the smaller table model radios that do not have power transformers, most of them are just average radios, but there are some unique higher performance models out there, and they're worth seeking out.
It's an also, you know, when people go out to look, there's so many reasons people go out to look to get into the hobby. Some people will, as you were talking, we talked a little earlier, people might say, well, that's something I had one of those when I was a kid. I'm not really interested in hearing it play again, but that brings back memories for me because Uncle Harry had one, and we used to listen to the Cubs games on that. So, you know, you could take something that's, you know, relatively... you know, Mets maybe from a performance point of view, but if the cabinet's in great shape or, you know, if it's a Bakelite set and it's scratch-free and it really takes up a nice shine and you're going to put that up for display, you know, that's a good radio for its purpose. So I think what you also get into here is what are you looking to do with it? Do you want to actively listen? Do you want to, you know, DX on it? Do you want to listen to what's left on shortwave? Or are you looking really to have something that's more of an artifact, you know, something like you put in a museum. Maybe we don't play it, but it sure looks great. And
well, that's the case with a lot of the transistor radios, the pocket radios that were, you know, the Japanese imports and all those things.
The first wave of those, very popular to collect.
The very early ones are very popular with collectors for the style of them and the completeness. They do not care if the radio performs. They want to know that it has the original transistors, the original capacitors, all the original components, and that the case is flawless.
Yep. Does it have a nifty little stand that it came with? Remember those little wire stands?
Yes. And also some of them had the handle would flip back, and you could have it stand at a 45-degree angle. But also, if you have the box and if you have the original, you know,
complete with earphone
that came in the box, all that stuff, you know, that's
all part of the cash. That's right.
Those collectors are very interested in it being all original, whether it works or not. In fact, they don't even care if it works because performance on those kind of things was pretty marginal to begin with. But they just want to see that it has the original parts, all original. It doesn't matter if it works. So in that particular field of collecting, you know, vintage transistor radios, that's a different thing. You know, whereas, you know, you get into console radios and the finer table radios of the 1930s, it's all about performance. And so the people that collect those tend to like to fully restore them, which, you know, as you know, usually means replacing a lot of capacitors and resistors and going through the whole thing, cleaning all the switches and controls and, you know, doing a lot of different things to it.
Now, here's a question I have for you, Mark, and I don't know if this is... things always seem to be popping up, but do you have a feeling or do you have a feel for if, you know, what people would say are desirable radios and whether that's rarity or performance or attractiveness of a cabinet, have those, for the most part, found their way into the hands of people who are collectors or caretakers? It seems to be harder and harder to come up with a good find, you know, like a... just walking into an antique store and finding a Philco 90 underneath a pile of knickknacks and old World's Fair plates. That doesn't seem to happen as much as it used to be. Is that just a product of the times that a lot of stuff that was very collectible has already found itself a home, or do you still hear people finding something exceptional, you know, in a spot they don't likely expect it to be found?
Well, yeah, I guess because time has passed since the, you know, that when you have to understand how things move as time moves on through the ages. When the radios were made, they were very cherished because they were very expensive. So they, you know, let's say a Philco Model 90 you mentioned, in 1930 or 31 when that radio was made, that was an upper line radio and it cost a fair amount of money, and that was as we were sliding into the Depression. So they sold extremely well, though, because they were more affordable radios than even some of the others, but it was still a lot of money. It cost you, you know, at that time, I think it was a $60 radio, if I remember right.
Which is quite a pile of cash.
Which was a lot of money at that time. So then, you know, 10 years later, that radio was very out of date and not worth putting money into at that point in time. People could pick up another radio for half that much money that performed as well. So by that time, the radio was relegated to the attic or the basement or wherever, or maybe it was put in the garage and used sparingly. And then by, you know, as time went on, the thing got stored away and it just never got used throughout the 40s and 50s. And then, you know, the person who bought that originally probably was maybe passing on in the 1960s. So their estate was coming up on the market and the kids would come in and take everything out. And then they would sell things or give them away to the resale store. Okay, so now in the 60s, that's when those radios started showing up in the resale stores mostly. And, you know, throughout the 70s and 80s, that was occurring. Well, you know, you don't have an original owner of a Model 90 passing on today. They were already dead 30 years ago.
Right.
That's not going to happen anymore, you know. So what, you know, why would one end up, you know, today in a resale store freshly?
Sure.
And why would anybody price it way below what the market is, you know?
Right.
You know, because it's easy now for anybody to look on the internet and say, well, what is this thing worth, you know?
Yep.
And they can look at eBay and they can look at, you know, all these different sites. So the days of walking into a resale store and getting a very clean Model 90 for $20 are gone. They'll never be back.
Yep.
But the caveat is that eBay also has made, eBay and other sites, internet sites, there's the Radio Attic and there's other sites where you can buy radios, have made it a lot easier to find anything you really want. And because there's so much of it out there, the prices on some things are pretty reasonable. So unless you're looking for the very top of the top, you can actually buy a radio today in real money for less than you probably could at any other time.
Yeah, you know, and it's a funny phenomenon, too, because I occasionally will visit the Philco Forum, and they have a little section dedicated to items available online. So, you know, if you know of a guy who lives in New Jersey, for example, and you saw a particularly sharp Philco that was on Craigslist up in his neck of the woods, you might try to give him a heads up and say, hey, you know, Charlie, you know, I saw this. What do you think? You know, is it close to you? And maybe he could go and grab it if it's worth saving. But, you know, sometimes what you'll see people will post is, you know, these ridiculous eBay postings. You know, people who feel they have anything that's quote-unquote old, and old for a lot of people now is anything, you know, before 1970. So you'll see something that looks like...
No, old for a lot of people is anything before 1990.
Oh, don't make me feel worse than I already do.
I have to. I have to stop you and say that's true. If you look at Craigslist, you'll see that. If you just type in the word vintage radio, and what you'll see in there is anything before 1990.
I know. You'll see you know, the realistics that you used to get at Radio Shack. But I guess to get back to my point, though, is you'll find these things that look as if they were waterlogged.
Yep.
You know, the rust all over the chassis, the wires are just rotted off, there's no power cord, the veneer is all popping off, and because it's old, because this person has figured out, hey, this is from 1938, you know, rare, exclusive, antique offering for $1,000, and you just, so there are some people who are, the other side of that coin is there are a lot of people who are out of touch just because as we do age, you're right. The younger generation views anything that's that old, well, gee, this has got to be valuable because it's from 1938.
Right. Well, and, of course, it's a fallacy, too, because age does not equate with value.
Yeah, it's, you're right.
It's desirability, and desirability's factors are many. There's desirability is determined by the quality of the item at hand, whether it's in good condition or bad condition, and also the style of whatever the thing is, and things like that. And so rarity only amplifies value after it has some desirability.
Now, you know, something else we talked on briefly before we got on air, and, you know, it, to your point, that the generation that would have had a lot of these vintage sets that, you know, as they pass away and their children sell off their estate or liquidate, you know, what's in the old homestead, you know, those days are rapidly going because that generation, you know, that World War II generation or the 30s generation is gone, and that's
They're
just
gone.
What it is. But, you know, sometimes you'll find folks who are in their, you know, later years who are active in the vintage radio hobby, and they've collected sets. They were in a position that they were in their prime of collecting when that stuff was becoming available. So they've built up quite a good collection of this stuff, and now they're looking around at everything that's going on in the world with technology and with what their children are interested in or people that are close to them, and they realize that this Philco 90 to me means a great deal, but to whoever I might leave it to, it doesn't mean much of anything, maybe other than a few dollar signs if they can find a taker. So if you're in the situation where you belong to a radio club and you talk to some of the old-timers or the older folks who might be in a situation where they're downsizing their house or they have to move into assisted living or move into a one-floor apartment and they can't take all this stuff with them, many of them are looking for a good home, you know, for something that they've restored or spent a great deal of time on or have cherished. And if you're in a position where you can say, hey, look, I've wanted that same set, let's talk turkey, maybe I can take some of these. You know, that might be another good avenue to get some sets that are a little rarer and very desirable, but get them at a good price because, you know, rather than just a profit motive, there's somebody who's trying to pass it on to a different generation.
Well, not only that, but buying stuff face-to-face, either someone you know or through at one of the shows where you're buying a radio face-to-face, you get to question the person and know exactly what kind of condition it's in. You get to see it and such. Whereas when you're buying stuff online, it's more distant. You don't get to see things quite as clearly sometimes. And also, a lot of folks just don't want to bother with listing things and shipping them and all that. So there's still a big place in the world for the vintage antique radio shows that are all over. Unfortunately, most of the bigger shows are all east of the Mississippi, but there's a few of them west of the Mississippi, too. And the clubs are great places to get those kind of first-hand deals.
And you don't have to pay shipping and handling, and you can check it out, and you can ask the guy, you know, what kind of work has it had? You know,
right.
Does it need anything else, or is it pretty
right.
much ready to go? And, you know, people love to tell you the stories about how they restored something and how much time it took them and where they might have had to go to find that escutcheon that they thought they'd never find again, but he scraped one up somewhere. So not only is it a nice way to make a purchase, you also get the story behind the story. And, you know, a lot of collecting radios is not only the radio itself, it's that story behind it. Where did you get it? How did you find it? Who did it belong to? Who might have listened to it? Where did you come up with the parts for it and all of that? And that's face-to-face, you can get all of that. And that's why these shows are so fun.
Another thing at some of the shows here in Michigan, we make a point to advertise to the general public quite a bit. And so we run, we get free publicity announcements in all kinds of newspapers and radio and TV. And we also call the radio and TV reporters and try and get them to do stories on our shows. And one thing that we started doing years ago to attract publicity was to offer what we call radio rescue, where anybody from the general public can come into one of our shows and get a free appraisal on any radio or related type of item that they have, vintage electronics type item. And that has made our shows more exciting because we never know who's going to walk in
right,
the door and
right,
what.
For the surprise,
exactly. And I'll tell you that you know, we've had some very, very interesting and desirable type radios show up at the Michigan shows. You know, granted, we're up here in what I call the radio belt, which is where a lot of radios were made in Chicago and on the East Coast, and we're halfway in between, or not halfway in between, but, you know, we're in that stretch.
And yep.
Everywhere north of Kentucky, from Illinois to the East Coast, is where most of the vintage radios are in the United States. And we're right in there. And Pennsylvania is probably the best state of all, but they're just all over up here. Whereas, you know, down in the south and out west, they're much more scarce. But we get people walking into our shows with some really desirable stuff. I mean, we've had Catalans come in the door, Catalan cabinets. We've had in this area in Detroit, they sold a lot of the German imported radios, the Grundigs, the Telefunkens, the Blaupunks, the Emuts, the Nordmendis, the Kurdings, the et cetera, et cetera. And those are nice radios. They're not highly sought after by a lot of collectors, but they're really good quality radios.
And they sound great, and they're something that people would love to put in. You know, if they have a jack on it, you can play your CDs through it.
Play your iPod. You can jack into the back and play your iPod through them. They're just really nice radios.
Still have some good FM to listen to, too.
Right, yes. And I think I mentioned, I may have mentioned on one of your programs in the past, you know, that we had not this past year at our Lansing show, but the year before, we had a Spartan Nocturne, which is the console
version of the
floor model version of the famous Bluebird
right.
Mirrored radio, and
the Art Deco Holy Grail.
Yes, it's one of the Holy Grail radios of all time. It didn't just walk in the door. We knew it was going to come in advance from a non-radio collector person. She found it in the barn. Her father had bought it at an auction, and he passed away in the 90s, and then her mother put the thing out in the barn and left it there, and then her mother was going to be going to a care facility, and so they were going through the house and the barn and going through things, and this woman who's in her 50s, who's the daughter of the man who bought it, looked online at radios and saw this, you know, saw that this radio had sold for over $50,000.
Ka-ching, ka-ching, the dollar signs.
She freaked out and couldn't believe it, but at first she wasn't sure it was the same thing,
right.
So she got in touch with our club, and then one of our club members went out there and said, sure enough, it is the real deal. Unfortunately, it was in weathered condition. It had gotten a little rusty, but it was all there, except for one knob was missing, and that could be reproduced, but all the rest of it was there. And we encouraged her to bring it into our auction, which she did, and we publicized that pretty heavily in the radio community, so a lot of radio collectors came to our auction year before this past Lansing show, and they bid on it, and the radio sold for $34,000.
Yeah.
So, you know, and you know, that's the kind of stuff that can happen at the live shows. I know I go down to the Charlotte, North Carolina show every March, which if any of your listeners want to look it up online, it's cc-awa.org. And that is their website, and they do a great show down there every March. And they have some very significant auctions down there, surprisingly, because a lot of collectors who formerly lived in New Jersey or Pennsylvania.
Sure, relocated, yep.
Relocated down to North Carolina for their retirement years.
Yep.
And some amazing stuff has turned up down there. There was one man who had worked for RCA and had collected a lot of RCA memorabilia and dealer promotional items and things of that nature that he got when they closed out one of their Camden warehouses, apparently.
Now, with the staying on this same vein, maybe we can kind of shift gears here a little bit. You know, your club has a newly designed site that's getting up and off the ground, which is wonderful. It looks very sharp. And one of the things I noticed was you talked about your radio rescues that you do at the meets, but there's also a section online now where you can submit a radio to be evaluated. And I just thought that was the neatest thing. And maybe you could just tell us a little bit about what you guys hope to accomplish with that. I mean, that was really cool.
Well, that's another one of the features that we're integrating into our new site, which is www.michiganantiqueradio.org. And we're going to have it so that several different people can edit different sections on that website. So that's one of the features we're going to have. So it hopefully will get filled out quite a bit more. Right now, what you see on there is pretty much a stub from the original site that we had, and we've just created more functionality with it. But that feature of being able to evaluate a radio online is a new thing we just put on there, and that's part of our whole club mantra right now is outreach. We're trying to make ourselves accessible to the general public. So somebody who casually finds a radio in their father's estate or you know, gets one given to them by a neighbor or whatever, can access information easily from the club and feel welcome coming in if they're a newbie, because you know, there's some, you know, it's a bit intimidating when you think about that. This is technical stuff, and you know, the average person might think, oh, well, gee, you know, I don't know if I want to get involved in something like this at all. And what we want to say to them is, yeah, everybody should be able to collect antique radios and also other vintage type items and find themselves sure. welcome in this community.
Yeah, it gives them a place to bring it. It gives them a place where there's mm-hmm. no pressure. You know, it's not like right. you're going to an auction house or to somebody who mm-hmm. might want to take advantage of you if they're a state right. auctioneer. Not to say there aren't some very good, honest, straightforward people in that business, but I think there's, you know, people are naturally a little bit concerned about, am I going to get, you know, taken advantage of? But generally, when you approach a group of folks in a radio club, they're outgoing. I've met so many nice people willing to share information, and you know, it's all about you in many cases, not about them. They're just happy to have somebody new interested in the hobby, and they'd be happy to share some information about whatever you have with them. And I thought that was great that you could put that online now too. So, and I just thought that was a really neat feature to have too. So
well, another thing I want to mention is that we're starting to go in the direction of calling ourselves more of a vintage electronics group, because as time goes on here, antique radios are really not just the thing that people have some interest in. You've got the vintage you know, video games, you've got vintage calculators and computers, you've got vintage audio gear of all kinds, including the solid-state gear of the 1970s, 80s, and 90s.
Show somebody a nice KLH original radio, you know, a nice
yeah.
Henry. Oh, well, that sounds, you know, that's
yeah.
that is very exciting stuff these days.
That's right. And that's, and talk about things that are that show up, you know, fresh from an estate. That's what's happening now is you've got the equipment from, let's say, the Fisher tube-type stereos of the 60s. The folks who bought those new back then are now the folks that are well up in their senior years, and those items are coming up all the time.
Yep. John Coomer out at Antique Radio Classified loves Fisher. That's his big thing.
Right. People are rediscovering all that stuff, and I'm doing a lot of business. I think you may have mentioned before that one of my specialties is controls. I do volume and tone controls, and that's one of my specialties in the parts and repair business. And Fisher units happen to have a lot of problems with their what we call a ganged pots, where they have two sections, one for the left and one for the right channel, and those are frequently worn out or they don't track very well between the two channels, so that one channel's louder than the other. Those are problems that people have a lot, and I'm one of the main sources for that particular type of thing.
Which would lead me, just not to get off topic again, but just a general question. How is business? I mean, it's a good way to take the pulse of the hobby to find how many people are still looking to get parts or to complete that set or restoration project. How are things going with you in the parts business, Mark? Do you find...
I've got a lot of business. I've got such a wide range of stuff here, And also I have really good deals with capacitors on my website, which is oldradioparts.net, that I've had no problems with sales. I've every year
traffic is good, then that's great.
More and more stuff, and I think it's just that there's only a few of us that really specialize in a wide range of parts. There's just a handful, really, of people that do this, and so I think that's why my sales have gone up and up and up every year.
Well, you know, the other thing, too, is, you know, you get a lot of repeat business. You'll find word of mouth is big in this hobby. You know, I found this at so-and-so's, or, you know, XYZ helped me out. He, you know, was able to track this down for me. And so you get your, you know, one or two happy customers, you know, it could turn into five happy customers. And, you know, especially as people chat a little bit at some of the shows, or they say, hey, where did you find that? You know, if they've particularly found something that they've been scrounging for that you somehow managed to get because you have a good source. So, and that's that's a sound. Hopefully, the hobby is staying healthy. That's very good to hear. So it's like taking the pulse and blood pressure. We like to hear that stuff. So that's
great. I
think
the basic core of it is very healthy. I think you know, the fact that there's a lot of reproduction parts in certain specialty areas that are available, and because there's so much on the web as far as interconnection between people looking for parts and sources. So,
well, you know, here's something for you. Not to interrupt you, but here's something for you. There's a store up here that's an electronics store, and it's sort of a throwback. They've been there for about 50 years or so, maybe even longer. And they have everything. They've got test equipment and science fair kits, soldering irons. They've got it all. And they, as you can imagine, in their day, they were a seller of tubes. And tubes vanished for a long time, but you know what? Because of the interest in audio amplifiers, especially in the musical community, they've just put in a new vacuum tube display. So think about how weird that is, that they actually dedicated a took out some newer stuff and replaced it with vacuum tubes, which I just thought that was the coolest thing on the planet, to see them setting up the vacuum tube display again. And it's mostly stuff for amplifiers, but it's just nice to see it have a spot. And it's that end of the hobby. You talk about opening the doors and trying to get people in music in general. Well, for somebody who's a guitar head and wants to have you know, that silver tone amp restored, well, he's going to need some tubes if he's going to do it. And there are many people who'll tell you that the sound they get out of their instruments with a tube amplifier is just very different than they get from a solid state. And it's sort of creating a little boomlet for tube sales. So I thought that was a very good sign.
Well, actually, in the musical instrument market, tubes have never gone away. They've been there all along, and that's what really actually is driving the current tube production market. They're, you know, the stuff that's being made in Russia and China that's being imported here under many various different brand names and quality. That's been going on for a long, long time. Of course, vintage radios don't use mostly those kind of tubes.
I know.
So,
I know. And, well,
nor does.
It's nice to see them.
Yeah, right.
At least they're on the shelf.
Well, and the thing I always have to tell people over and over is that there's no shortage of vintage radio tubes. We've got millions of them out there still to this day. They're probably always going to be there. They're never going to all disappear. So there's, you know, as it applies to vintage radios, most all of those are available and not for too much money.
Yep, that's the least of our problems as far as parts for radios go.
Right.
And to the new folks in the community, the tubes will be the least of your problems. It'll be electrolytic capacitors and resistors that are wandering all over the place and tuning condensers that are stuck and frozen up.
And of course, all those parts are, you know, capacitors and resistors are very cheap today. They're probably cheaper today than they ever have been in the history of their manufacturing, you know, in terms of real dollars, you know. Most all the ones that I sell, you know, the capacitors, for instance, are priced under 50 cents a piece. So,
and in many cases perform better than what we used to have that was paper and, you know, wax.
Yeah.
So that's...
Yeah, that's true. And like a whole radio, typical, let's say, 8-tube radio has about 2 capacitors per tube. So it might be about 15, 16 capacitors in a radio. So, you know, you're really only talking about generally about $10-$12 in parts from that end. So not a whole lot of money there. Of course, it takes a lot of time to sit down and replace them all, but you know, with a minimum amount of soldering equipment and a few tools, you can learn how to do that. And of course, also now there's some really good tutorials on YouTube of people who have demonstrated their restoration skills in their shop.
It goes to show you the old and the new technology blending together. You know,
right.
And I think one of the things that happens too, though, for us, you know. It's a hard thing to communicate to folks who are new to the hobby because they look at a radio and they pull it forward into the modern era and they look at it and they try to compare it to all the other electronics we have. So they tend to look more at its shortcomings than really what it was. So I usually tell people, instead of pulling the radio forward into our world, why don't you go back into the radio's world and think about a world where you just got off maybe the streetcar and you walk home because you don't even have a car yet. And you have an ice box at home, and you're still reading books at night, and you go to bed early, and all of a sudden, you know, you have a radio in your house, which might be the highest technology device that's in your home now.
It was.
And here it is, and you can get news, and you can get music, and you can get entertainment, and gee, now I'll stay up till 10 o'clock at night, because if I stay up, I can pick up that show from Cleveland that comes on. I really like the music that guy plays. So think about how revolutionary it was and what a big deal it was, and appreciate it for that era, as opposed to trying to look at it in our era.
It was the internet of the 20s and 30s.
It was a great binder of America during especially World War II. An amazing tool to reach out and get everybody. People who might not have even had electricity yet, you know, living on farms or, in rural areas that weren't electrified yet, they had a battery set and they could listen to much the same stuff that the people in Chicago or Boston or New York or San Francisco listened to. So it was a great social leveler as well, because now you have entertainment available to you, whereas before you were going to read 2-week-old newspapers or get things through word of mouth, or you know,
or the only entertainment you might have ever heard was if a traveling musician came through town and
live music
and played some sort of a dance or something.
Yeah.
That you know, and if you lived out in the middle of Iowa, that was just not going to happen.
You know,
you're right. I mean, in at that time, that must have been a stunning type of thing, and as well, it was something that farmers could listen to hear the prices of crops and wheat and all those things. And know how much their pigs were going to bring at the market.
Sure, that was valuable news. And we're going to pursue that a little bit further. I have a fellow who's coming on who wrote an article not long ago on WLS, which started out as a farmer's station, really. We'll discuss that a little bit. So appreciate it for what it was as well as what it is today, because they're still fun to listen to. They still sound good. It's still fun talking about how to fix them and where to find them. And just make sure you're listening to a radio that's safely and well restored so you don't cause any harm to yourself, your radio, or your home. Mark, I'd like to thank you really for coming on and talking about all things radio. We appreciate the update from the Michigan Club. Check out Mark's website if you need some parts, and certainly check out the Michigan Antique Radio Club website as well. Mark, what's the old radio parts website again for anybody who might be looking for something?
I am at oldradioparts.net. And the Michigan Club website is located at michiganantiqueradio.org.
Hey, thanks a million for being on. I appreciate it. Take care.
Great. Thanks, Paul.
Bye-bye.
I'll do it today. I'll see my tailor, and this is what I'll say. I want a zoot suit with the reed pleat, with the drape shape and the skull cuff, to look sharp enough to see my Sunday gown. I want a reed sleeve with the right stripe and a dress vest with the glad in the latest fad to see my Sunday gown. Say, you don't look like the same boy.
want your boyfriend to show you how. Go out and get dressed all up.
I want a very brown gown with a soft top, a baby, and a hip slip. And a waist in the sharpest face to sing in my Sunday main. I want a very sky hat with a trim, a brim, a baby, and a zag bag. With a rib zip, though I look hip, just to see my Sunday sale.
The Andrews Sisters, looking sharp in that zoot suit, huh? Thing from the past. Zoot suit has a storied history attached to it, and we're not going to get into it here. They run a whole program on that. Mr. Mark Oppitt, thank you so much for being our guest this evening. This is Tube Talk. You can reach the program at tubetalk1@gmail.com. Send us your comments, questions, rants, raves, suggestions for guests or music. We love to hear from you. The more I hear, the more I can help bring this program into your section of the radio world. What do you like about radio? Be it vintage, antique, or current, we can talk about it. We focus on the old days, but we'll still talk about what's going on in radio today. Recently, a Pew Research poll also indicated that radio, which many people will tell you is going away and is dead, over 50% of people polled responded that they get their news, weather, and sports every day on the radio, despite everything you hear about internet sources and cell phones and online publications. And I think a lot of that probably has to do with the car radio as well. But anyway, radio, alive and well, it hasn't gone away. It lives on Friday nights on Tube Talk. And as we trundle out the door tonight, thanks for listening. We appreciate your listenership. Tell a friend about the wonderful program you've just heard, Tube Talk, on WRCA 1330. We're here every Friday night, 10 p.m. The happy program, the sedate program, the mellow, conversational, and good music program. We do it every week. Tell your pals.
Where's this place called Lonely Street? I'm looking for that lonely street. Boom, 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 boom. I've got a sad, sad tale to tell. Need a place to go and weep. Where's this place called Lonely Street? A place where there's just loneliness, where dim lights bring forgetfulness. Such as I, who came to bury broken dreams and watch an old love die. if I could find that lonely street where dim lights bring forgetfulness, where broken dreams and memories meet. Where's this place called Lonely Street? Where's this place called